I'd like to introduce our speaker for today, who will speak until 10:10, and will then answer any questions from the audience. Let's all welcome Darko from Costa Mesa.
My name is Darko. I'm an alcoholic. I would like to thank Red for inviting me to speak here, and it's a privilege to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I see this meeting is pretty full this morning, and it's Sunday morning, almost 10 o'clock. It's fairly early in the morning. If you're wondering you're an alcoholic, there's your answer. I mean, why would you be someplace like this in a Sunday morning, 9 o'clock, 9:30, unless you are alcoholic? Anyway, probably the most important thing that I'm going to say today is basically, I already said it. My name is Darko, and I'm alcoholic, and my sobriety date is June 9, 97. My home group is CDM Soup Kitchen Stag from Costa Mesa. And I've been listening to your meeting, and I love the reading. I love this third step prayer reading when it goes through, that you read the entire portion of the book over there. Just a perfect way for me to start a day, which is something that I've been doing since I got sober, but what a neat thing to do for a meeting, you know. I don't know where to even begin. The half hour is kind of a short period of time for me to tell my story. And trust me, I am an alcoholic. I wouldn't be here. I mean, there are a couple of three miracles right now by me being here. One of them is me being alcoholic and being sober right here. The other one is that where I come from, I'm geographically to be in Southern California, in this particular place, at this particular moment of time, and to be sober talking to somebody else about my life and being honest about it, that's a miracle. Where I come from, honesty is a liability, and it's just how it is. That's how I lived. And I was born in what was once Yugoslavia. I'm from Bosnia. I'm Croatian. What we do, we drink. I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, my family tradition is making of the plum brandy every year. We distill plum brandy. It's not illegal. And it's something that we've done, and I never even thought of that as something that is wrong or that it should be approached with caution or any of that stuff. I mean, we would make distilling anywhere from like 150 to 500 or so liters a year. It was mainly for consumption for family, and to gift it away, it was never sold. And it was something that I couldn't wait to participate with because my grandfather was doing it. By this time, my father already died. He died when I was 6 and a half. My mother died when I was 1 and a half years old. So I was raised by grandparents. And making a plum brandy was a big deal because it was a rite of passage, and I was proving myself that I can work and all that. And as soon as I was able to drink, I was proving to them that I can drink better than them because I never wanted to drink like them. They drank good, but not good enough. First time that I got drunk by accident, I got drunk when I was, I think third or fourth grade. I was around 10 years old, a little less than 10 years old. We went and played in a basement of my friend's house, and there were some barrels, and you know how boys like going in the dark corners, discovering stuff, researching stuff. I found this barrel, and I've seen a hose. I dumped the hose in to find out what is in there. Sucked on it a little bit. It was a brandy, and I had a few swallows, and then we ate some of the green apples that were not ripe from the trees and all that. By the time I was done, and I was falling over all over the place and puking, it was late in the evening. My grandma was looking for me. She found out through somebody where I was, and she half carried me home. And I remember being punished, you know, like, you need to go and just take your clothes and throw it in a dirty clothes and go straight to sleep. And what I did is, I guess they caught me trying to flush my dirty socks, trying to flush them down the toilet. And then they were in a living room, and they caught me passing through the living room, going straight to a kitchen, opening oven, trying to take a leak in oven. That was like 10 years old. Worked in a steel mill throughout all this time. As soon as I was able to drink, socially acceptable drinking age over there doesn't exist, you know. So as long, I was the kid that you could see, like if you go to concerts and stuff like that, once in a great while I see kids like me, they're 11, 12-year-old boys, they don't belong there. But they are smoking cigarette butts, you know, that they find on a street, and they have a beer someplace on the side and drink. That was me. And I was almost thrown out of school a few times for drinking. And I was the worst soldier. I was in the military. I was one of the worst soldiers in military. They didn't know what to do with me. I threatened that I'm going to kill my captain. If he orders me to shoot anybody, I'll shoot him first. You know, I was talking to my friends here just earlier about the fact that we are sober and how our lives have changed. And as a result of taking steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have made amends in my life. And one of those amends was making amends to my sister. And I had an opportunity to invite her to come by and visit me last year, and she stayed with me for two weeks, and it was like the best time of my life. I mean, it was, and hers too. It was just like being kids, little kids as we were when we were like before she was married, she got married, and before I went off drinking and all that stuff. It was unbelievably beautiful. But she saw me drink quite a few times, and she saw me drink the way I drink. And one of the I mentioned it to my friend Patrick that I might share about it. One of the last drinking that she has witnessed is she had some big celebration for her daughter being baptized, and my grandfather supplied the plum brandy, and he told me, look, this is pretty strong, so watch how you drink, because it's going to get you fucked up. But those, and he was looking at people who were like amateurs like we do, you know. He said, those guys, they'll be falling all over the place, so just to watch them, don't drink too much. I said, okay, no problem. So anyway, I obviously drank too much. And my soon-to-be wife, who was American from L.A., she was there with me, and we were all getting drunk and all that. And I had this car that I bought, that Citroen, and we drove already that car throughout Europe and have a fun. And the plan was we were going to sell that car for tickets for the United States. And I remember we were about to leave that party, and she says, you're not going to drive, you're too drunk. And I said, look, this is my town, my street, my car. I know what I'm doing. And my sister was trying to tell Darko, don't drive, have her drive. And that got me even more pissed off. So I got in a car, got her in a car, and she wouldn't stop talking about how I was driving. It was just a mile and a half drive from my sister's house to my house, and windy roads and stuff like that. But all she was doing is just telling me how I'm driving too fast, how I'm this car is so important to us, and blah, 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 blah. And I remember asking her, do you like this car? And she says, I love this car. And I said, okay, no problem. And I drove straight into a garbage container and, you know, just messed it up completely. And she kind of exploded out of the car screaming and running towards house. And my sister came. She heard the crash, too. They drove in a car, all the guests and all that, and they're driving towards me, and I'm over there in a car sitting on the hood of the car like this. And that was just my attitude. And anyway, I ended up changing a continent in order to change my life. That was one of my last geographics. I thought if I go to United States and I start living here, I'm not going to do any more dope, and I'm not going to drink much. And next thing I know, after few successes and few kind of downfalls, I ended up on the streets of Costa Mesa. It never happened to me. When I was back in Europe, I had it all lined up. I was hooked up and all that. All of a sudden, I'm like some kook on the streets. You know, I don't have no place to go. I'm being thrown out of motel, and I just couldn't go on anymore. It was just one of those days, I just couldn't go on anymore. Couldn't go through one more day. One more day, Morgan. I couldn't go one more day like that. And I ran into a guy who I thought he was a bum, and he told me about this place. Next thing I know, I went to that place. It was Costa Mesa Lano Club, and they gave me some number. And I called that number, and they told me to come in, and I go over there, and they say, look, man, if you, I can't check you in right now, but if you come in tomorrow morning, first thing, 7 o'clock, I'll find you a bed. And I was there 7 o'clock. I was Charlie Street. And that was 1996. And I didn't even know that place was about stopping drinking. I didn't know about any of that. But I found out about disease of alcoholism while sitting on a couch of Charlie Street. I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, about alcoholism, or any of that stuff. As I was reading Doctor's Opinion with other people and reading the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and listening to other people share and all that, I was able to identify myself as an alcoholic. I was so relieved that I have a disease of alcoholism that it's not something else that was wrong with me. I was so relieved once I got out of Charlie Street, I got drunk right away. I thought, now that I know what's really going on, what the problem is, hold that thought, I'll be right back. And the truth is, it was necessary for me to do that, because now, few days passed, not even few days, I realized every single thing that was happening in Charlie Street, it was happening right here on the inside. Every drunk that I had throughout my life made a sense. I could recognize all those progressions that we go through, the emotional stuff, the way of thinking, the mental twist, all that obsession. I mean, all that stuff was happening galore, like on front of my eyes. And I wanted to go back, and I just decided, okay, I'm going to get sober. And I couldn't. And I tried really hard, and I couldn't get sober. And I remember somehow squeezing myself into Charlie Street, and one of the guys that no longer is around here, he passed, I think, 2006, Kendall. He threw me out of the Charlie Street. I got it all lined up. I got a bed and all that. He said, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm a resident here. He said, hell not, you're not. You're not. Get the fuck out of here. And that's what it took for me. Not too much later after that, I ended up in one of the Alano clubs, and there was a Harley Davidson with Croatian flag decal on it, and I asked whose bike was it. They told me he's in that room, and I go over there. There's a bunch of men in this room, and a bunch of men in that room were the men that I met actually in Charlie Street. And I meet this guy that has a Croatian flag on his Harley, and next thing I know, one of the guys that sat with me next to me on a couch reading to me the book of Alcoholics Anonymous while I was detoxing, he got up and he shared from podium just like this, and he was telling my story, everything. And after the meeting, I pulled the guy aside. I made sure that nobody's watching. I just like took him a corner. It was like a drug deal going down. And I couldn't even use the word sponsor. I mean, I hated every single term that I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I basically asked him, look, man, can you please help me out? I can't do this. That's what it took. And this journey began there. Started taking steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life hasn't changed. I mean, hasn't stopped changing ever since. As a result of taking these steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I, in a first step, finding out that the fact that about alcoholism, that I'm alcoholic, that my life has become unmanageable, and the coming to terms with some of the spiritual principles, like acceptance, like accepting the fact that I'm an alcoholic. And going on to a second step, and finding out a little bit more about hope, and finding out, most importantly, about faith and the difference between the faith and a belief and all that. And it doesn't take too much. I found out that although I hated God with all the fervor that I had, that's okay. That although I hate God, all I need to do is believe, just believe a little bit that there might be a God. And that I'm well on my way, and that's exactly what it says in the book. And once I opened myself to that process and I started taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I ended up going to this retreat that we still do, our home group does. And it's not like Redlands retreat. It's kind of similar. We just go through the steps while we are at the retreat. So I go to this retreat, and I'm right at the second and third step, and I'm hating God, and I know that I have to handle this, and God hated me, and I hated him all my life. It was just that kind of relationship. And And I come to this meeting, and there was a priest that taught that he's going to be our retreat master. And he's all in robe and all that. And he said, well, I'm your retreat master. And we kind of explained to him that we don't have retreat masters, and that if he's an alcoholic, he's welcome to join and enjoy the retreat with us. And that's exactly what happened. His name was Father Anthony. And he was he wanted to share, so he got up on a podium and started sharing about his drinking and how he needed to find the power of his own understanding, God of his own understanding, although he was trained priest, and he was Franciscan priest, just like the ones that I hated. And he was sharing from the podium how he needed to find God of his own understanding. And he shared about all this, and he finished sharing it by saying something like this, no offense to anybody, he finished like this. He says, don't fuck with God. And that's what he says, and he sat down. And I'm thinking, I got to talk to that guy. Because there's something happening here that, you know, if he can say what he just said, I might be wrong. And that's how it works. You know, God doesn't make too hard of a terms if you're willing to seek him. And that's exactly what happened to me. I ended up talking to this guy later on. Half hour later, I walked out of his office, and I had made a peace with God. And very same evening, I did my second and third step with my sponsor. I found myself holding hands with a man on our knees and a same third step prayer and stuff like that. And just God got better and better from there. I got into a fourth step with the knowledge of the higher power, and I was riding it out. I really wanted to. The only fear that I had in doing a fourth step was that I'm not going to be able to be honest enough, sufficiently honest, to actually stay sober and do this stuff. And I wanted to do this, and I called my sponsor all the time. What do I do now? What do I do now? So if you have a sponsor, don't wait for him to chase you down. Call him, ask him what to do, or call her and ask her what to do. Anyway, he would tell me basically, this is what I've done, or this is what we do, and don't worry, you know, just to do this. But on the other hand, you know what, don't even worry about it, because I don't think you're going to stay sober that long anyway. it was just our little, like, I hate you, F you type of relationship, but it was important for me, you know. He challenged me on that level, and I did this, and I'll never forget my first fifth step. We started on some field in Costa Mesa, and I'm so self-obsessed and reading the stuff that I wrote down, and next thing I know, we are in a truck, and we are on a freeway, and I'm reading this. The next thing I know, we are on front of some institution on a lawn, and we are reading. I'm still reading this, and he's writing the stuff down, and I'm about finished, and he says, well, do you have anything that you didn't write down that you are not going to tell anybody? You're going to take it to the grave with you. I said, I do. So we took care of that too, and he gave me a list of my character flaws on a little thank you card, and thanked me for the opportunity for him to be of service to me. And we walked to this institution, and it was a VA hospital, and there was a guy laying, appeared to be dead in a bed, and he had some kind of like a notes above his bed stating like, if I appear to be sleeping, just read me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff like that. And I ended up meeting old Wilbur, who was on his way out, and he was one of my grand sponsors that I didn't know. So we read him a big book, and I felt really weird when I was asked to introduce myself to this man while he was completely unconscious, but I did that anyway. And I thank him for doing what he has done with my sponsor. And he opened his eyes for a second, just thanked me for coming in and introducing myself to him. And, they talk in the fifth step about nearness, how we feel the nearness of our Creator. Well, I walked out of that VA hospital walking this high above the ground. And it was just the fact. It says that, you know, the fact that God is in our lives is just an indisputable fact. It was right there, and it's just how it happened. And my life has a purpose as a result of taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't like speaking in meetings. I really don't, like you. But it's no longer about me. It's about you. You know, I don't have no power to get anybody sober. I don't know what is going to happen to anybody here and all that. But I know that I was asked to be of service, and this is what I do. And I actually supposed to be at work right now. I work right here, not too far from here. And I'll give you this story, too. As a result of taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a cell phone number that is the same number since 1998. I have the same cell phone number. I've been employed by the same company since June of 98. It's a multi-franchise dealership. I'm one of the managers there. And I was off for 5.5 months. I had a surgery on my neck. And I didn't even realize this until not too long ago. So I'm off for 5.5 months taking care of my health and all that. And I go back and I'm welcome back, and I found slightly different position that'll allow me to still heal and all that. And I realized that all this time that I was out of the work, that I had a master key for every freaking thing that they ever had over there. There's a multi-million dollar inventories and all kinds of personal informations for millions of over thousands of people and all that. And their two credit cards were with me all that time. The miracle is not that I didn't want to use them. The miracle is that they didn't find out necessary to remind me of any of this. You know, and that's a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a result of taking steps for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not me. A lot of things are changing in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not one of the guys that have a right or that I have experience to criticize some of the stuff, but I like what you had to say earlier, Phil. Is that your name, Phil? Is that correct? No, Phil. Yeah, I like the emotion which you expressed, like you were all like up in arms and trying to safeguard AA. I feel that way too, and I have to hold myself down and remember where I come from and what I'm operating with before I react. But I can understand that feeling right here. I can understand exactly how you felt. Like not too long, I was blessed enough to have a sponsor who has placed me in a position to go to a bunch of book studies, step studies, and a lot of these book studies and step studies were populated by people that were much older in age than I was. And they were really long-term sobriety, 30, 40, 50 years sober, blah, blah, blah. And I was told to be of service to them. Do they need a chair to sit down, coffee? Is their cup empty? Do they need water? Do they need ride home or from home to a meeting? That was my job. That's how I learned how to be helpful and how to be respectful and how to make amends to my grandfather and grandma that I couldn't make amends to. But what happened is some of those people would share something like I heard not too long ago, one gentleman was sharing about his wife who has passed away, and she had a long-term sobriety, and he was referring to her sobriety, something to this effect, like when Mary received her sobriety, and then he referred to the date of her sobriety date. It just reminded me where we come from and what it's all about. You know, that it's a gift, it's a grace, and you know, with the advent of all the recovery centers and stuff like that, and a lot of stuff that has been kind of like watered down and mixed in and all that, I really need to remember what I am and where I come from and what is this all about. For me personally, my purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. And it's also to adhere to the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially to anonymity and stuff like that. For this guy right here, I have to make sure that I... How can I say it? Put myself a little bit in a shadow, rather in a forefront, because it's very dangerous for me to be in a forefront, to be in a limelight and all that. I have to watch out for that. One of the reasons that I chose my sponsor was because he told me it's nobody's business who my sponsor is. And my direction was not to tell anybody who my sponsor is unless they have to know, like somebody in recovery home or something like that. And I respected that, and I found out later why that was. Main reason is because I don't want to find myself in a position to where people will think that I got it. And then everybody is coming and asking me, like, I'm the shit, I know what's going on. And then all of a sudden, this alcoholic will buy into that stuff and try to live up to your idea of what I am. you might as well just give me a fifth, because that's what is going to happen. There are people that I met on this journey, and some of them are gone. One of them was Phil Petty. I just want to mention his name. He was a dear friend of mine and a guy that just took me under his wing for some reason. We would start a conversation, and I would run into him 3 weeks later, and he would continue conversation right where we stopped. It just blew me away. That guy, of his, education and a background, will have enough time and pay attention to what I actually had to say. He taught me quite a bit. And another one, Stoney Fisher, who was my grand sponsor, who I'm grateful forever for taking time to take me through the steps a couple of times. And I'll finish with this, you know. I was told to get a home group and a sponsor and a sobriety date. I still have the same. I still get up in the morning and I do the same routine I was taught how to do when I was brand new. I get up early enough to do actually some reading, to get some quiet time, get on my knees, say some prayers, and then I go out there and act on those prayers. Thank you for letting me share.
Do we have time for the speaker? Okay. So we'll turn it back over to Darko for questions and answers.
Do I have to tell the truth? How did I get my name? I don't know. I guess my father and my mother figured it out. I mean, it's not nickname, trust me. I can't take a credit for any of that stuff. I'll tell you one thing, though. I was born on January 1st, 1962. And 4 o'clock in the morning, so I screwed up their New Year's Eve party right before I got even born. Yes.
What's the most difficult thing you've been through?
Oh man, there were quite a few. They were all difficult at the point of time when they were happening, but I lost quite a few friends in sobriety and. Some of them were sober and some of them were not. But the ones that was really hard for me to lose is couple of friends that I was tied with that were having a hard time getting this thing, and few of the friends, including Phil and Tony F, the guys that have died in multiple, you know, like I think Phil died around almost like 50 years sober, and Tony 48 or something like that. So. I miss having them here. I would love to have them here, and that was hard. But one of the toughest things that happened to me, it happened for a long time, too. It lasted for a long time, was my marriage when it was falling apart. And she relapsed, and everything was going haywire, and she was really going nuts. And Alcoholics, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is just absolutely the most powerful thing that I've ever encountered in my life. I mean, all I did is exactly what I was doing every day, but this time with a real fervor. I mean, I was getting on my knees. I do that now, but at that time when I was saying my prayer, I mean, I was just like a begging. And I was sponsoring more people than ever, and I was going to more meetings than I could stand, and everything worked out. But on the outside, I mean, it was like a bombs were exploding, and I was just perfectly safe, as it says in the 10-step promises. So.
Can you tell us a little about your home group, where it's at?
Well, my home group is, as I mentioned earlier, is a CDM Soup Kitchen Men's Stag, and it's Tuesday night at 7 o'clock in Costa Mesa. It's part of the bigger group that meets on a heliotrope in Corona del Mar, and a Newport Club in Newport Beach, that stems all this stuff stems from a Beverly Hills Men's Stag group, Roxbury group, which is basically the oldest and the first men's group in the world, actually, they actually started in 19. Their legacy goes back to 1946. They started way before the traditions and all that, and they wrote a letter to Bill and the guys in New York to give them some advice and to give them directions. Can they start a meeting that is for men only? And so they were told that as long as their primary purpose is to help each other stay sober and there's no other affiliation, they could start that meeting. And their main reason for trying to get men's meeting only was because most of these people were, they came back from a Second World War. Like, a lot of them were shell-shocked. At that time, they called shell-shock syndrome, but now it's a PTSD. They came and they just couldn't talk about some of the horrors that they have experienced with the general public. They really needed to have a tight men's group that they can actually be honest to the, you know, brutally honest if you want. And that's how that group started. When my grand sponsor ended up moving from Beverly Hills to Corona Del Mar, he traveled every Wednesday to Beverly Hills for that particular meeting until he got the direction from his sponsor that he can stop driving every Wednesday and actually start the meeting there. And that's how our meeting ended up starting. That was like a little bit of history, yes. The Beverly Hills Rugsby, absolutely, absolutely. They still meet every Wednesday in Beverly Hills at 7 o'clock. There's a plenty of groups that actually stand out of that group, including ours. Oh no! You're thinking about this is the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm talking about, and it's not an institution or any of that. Yeah. Oh, cool. Thank you. That's it. Thank you.